Welcome to the Business of Security podcast, brought to you by TrustMap for Security Performance Management. Your host is Josh Bruning, cybersecurity solutions engineer with TrustMap. Today, he talks with Alan Alford. Now, let's get to it.
What does the industry need to start talking about that we're not doing today?
Information technology is built on a horrible foundation. If we could sort of redo and start from the beginning, we would be so much better off.
If you don't invest in it, keep it running, it will blow up.
You also have to be able to go in with solutions, not just problems. We have a long way to go if we're going to win this fight.
At the end of the day, educated people are really the best countermeasure against all the threats,
Welcome to the Business of Security podcast. I'm your host, Josh Bruning, and today we have a very special guest, CISO and cybersecurity consultant, strategic information security virtual CISO or VCISO, coach, mentor, author, speaker, and host of the Cyber Ranch podcast, Alan Alford. Alan, welcome to the Business of Security podcast.
Well, howdy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you gave me a howdy. Sweet.
You get a howdy. You get a legit bona fide howdy.
Great. Hey, I thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. Yeah, you know, we always love, you know, seeing you around here, and I'm sure that the audience will get quite a treat today. Today we're talking about building a security program from scratch as a first-time CISO or first-time security leader. And we know that you have so much experience in the field. And everybody's got to be a first time at some point. So would you tell us a little bit about your first time experience? We know that you went through, well, the audience doesn't know, but I know that you went through the process of building a program from scratch, and you had about a week to do it. Could you give us a little bit more about that story?
Yeah. So let's see here. My very first CISO role, I was CISO at Polycom after a year of no CISO. And prior to that, there was a VP of IT and engineering that was kind of sort of doing a CISO type role. And so really, I was the first official CISO, but we already had some good stuff in place. My next CISO role, I was the first CISO at a cybersecurity startup. And previously, there had been a CISO role there as well, but that role had been much more sort of sales and marketing aligned and much less about the actual internal running of the program. And so that's kind of twice there that I was sort of the organization's first CISO, if you will. I mean, even the CEO introduced me as the first real CISO, so we'll go with his opinion. And then my next role was at a another telecommunications company where I was their first CISO. And let's see, what else have I done CISO-wise? From there, went to another cybersecurity startup where I was their first CISO. In between, I forgot to mention, I was at a data services company where I was the first ever delivery CISO for a company that did IT services for other companies. So I was kind of like the CISO over the field, if you will. And I was the first in that role as well. So I've done the first CISO for the org thing several times at this point.
Yeah, that's why, you know, you're perfect for this show and, you know, for this topic. And so, you know, what is it like building a security program from scratch, especially when you don't have a lot to go on? Maybe there's something, some systems in place, but practically speaking, you're building it from the ground up.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've got a lot of friends who've written first 90-day guides. I've got a couple of friends that have written first 90-day books. And I keep joking about we need to write a day zero to day, you know, 89 book. In other words, before you even begin, before you walk in the door, when you are coming in as a potential CISO for this organization, there are so many questions you should be asking and so many things you should be finding out during the interview process that most of us don't do. Most of us didn't know we needed to ask those things. And then we walk in the door and then we start asking the questions that we really should have been asking during the interview process. So that all being said, at the end of the day, you know, you walk in the door and ideally you have some solid sense of how secure the company really is, right? You should sort of have a good feel for that before you sign on. At a bare minimum, know that walking in the door. And then in practice, if you've done this more than once and you know what questions to ask during the interview, you've got even more nuance and more detail to that. But at the end of the day, whether you're forewarned and forearmed or not, you've got some fundamentals you're going to have to get through and do. And those fundamentals basically are as follows. Step one, where are the risks we're currently holding today? What are the biggest risks that we are currently sitting with and holding and not doing anything about? Number two, who are my champions and allies in the organization? Number three, who are my enemies in the organization who, for whatever reason, aren't pro on the CISO cause or the CISO need. I have actually interviewed at places where the CEO himself was like, I don't know why we need a CISO. You're going to find there's detractors to the role. There's detractors to the mission. Sometimes that's because they don't understand. Sometimes that's because they got burned by a bad CISO. And when I say bad CISO, I generally mean somebody who tried to put the interests of security over the interests of the business and the organization, somebody who saw security as its own end and agenda rather than as an alignment with the business and the organization. And so a lot of times there's resentment and hostility towards the CISO role, either because it's misunderstood or because they've had bad experiences with CISOs who weren't doing what they should do. So find out who your allies are, find out who your enemies are, find out what risks you're actually carrying. That's probably the most important first three things you can do.
Is this a love your enemy sort of situation? Do you build around those people or do you?
No. Make them your strongest allies is your goal. Start with somebody who's against the CISO cause and ask them why. What experiences have you had, or what is your assessment? What is your understanding? What is it about the CISO role that makes you think it's not desired, or that it's going to get in your way, or whatever it might be? And ask the questions and get them to uncover and find out, is it because they had the bad experience? Is it because they've got a bunch of preconceived notions? Either way, your number one mission as a CISO in every business you walk into is to be an accelerator, at a minimum to not be an obstacle, and at a maximum to be an actual accelerator of the business's objectives and goals. And that's a hard thing to do. Right? To try to secure things in a way that you actually speed up productivity, in a way that you positively impact the top line, the bottom line, or both. These are not easily done. And this is why there's a lot of bad CISOs out there that aren't pulling these things off, that are causing resentment of the whole CISO craft. And that's your mission. That's your number one mission. That's exactly what you should be up to. And if you've got detractors the day you walk in the door, it's because they haven't seen that that's possible. And you're going to have to show them that that's possible. And the best way to do that is to take them and make them your number one ally. Just walk in the door. Why are you against this paradigm? What is it you don't like about the role? Why don't you think the role needs to exist? Or what is it about the mission that you're against, or whatever? Find out what it is. And then tell them, you know what? You and I are going to work together to solve my interests and the business interests and your interests all in one interest. And we're going to do this together. And I'm going to align what I need to get done with what you need to get done. And I'm going to make sure I'm never in your way. And that message goes a really long way.
And preferably over a steaming pan or plate of fajitas and a glass of beer.
Or a margarita.
Or a margarita. Or a cup of coffee. You know, yeah. Do you ever stop selling cyber? You've been doing this for a long time.
No. Every CISO is a salesperson two times over. You're selling the problem and you're selling the solution. And you're constantly doing both. And then you're selling the fact that your solution isn't going to be harmful and that it's going to actually enable and accelerate, ideally, everything else going on around you and everybody else's mission, right? It's constant salesmanship.
And you start with risk. Why start with risk?
It's the most important thing. It's what we're really here to do, right? I mean, at the end of the day, ask a CISO, what are they protecting? And the answer should be data and people. Right? Not technology, data and people. Technology is a means to help you protect data and people. It's data and people you care about. But to broaden that and say, what is your actual charter? Not what you're here to protect, but what is your charter? My charter is to manage the risks to data and people. That's my charter. And I say manage risks. I don't say eliminate risks. I don't say mitigate risks. I say manage risks, because management of risk is inclusive of every possible risk outcome there could be. You could choose to accept a risk. You could choose to defer a risk. You could choose to mitigate it, partially mitigate it, completely eliminate it, transfer it to maybe cyber insurance or some other entity, et cetera, et cetera. It's all about risk disposition. That is exactly what a CISO is here to do. That's if I was asked in one sentence, what do? I manage cyber risk. And that is risk to data and risk to people.
Are there any risk-based frameworks that that we should be familiar with?
Oh, there's a boatload of them. Cybersecurity frameworks that CISOs employ. And I'll just pick like NIST-CSF, for example, the cybersecurity framework, CSF. These frameworks are all tools designed to help a CISO sort of manage their overall program. And one of the things I love about, and I'll just go ahead and say TrustMap, you know, you guys are over there at TrustMap, and I used to be at TrustMap. One of the things I love about TrustMap is TrustMap will take any standard framework a CISO might choose, could be CIS, could be CSF, could be ISO, blah, 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 PCI, SOC 2, yada, yada. And they'll overlay a maturity model on top of that framework. And to me, that is so critical because most of these frameworks are binary in nature. Do you or don't you have the thing? Do you or don't you do the thing? And the answer is always somewhere in between, right? Name any business where it's a firm yes, no answer to every question that might be asked. The reality is it's nuances and shades of progress and maturity, et cetera. So do a maturity overlay. You guys do that. I love that you do that. I do that. I was doing that before I met TrustMap, only I was doing it in crappy little spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. And so when I found TrustMap, I was like, A, I'm buying this tool, and B, I went on the advisory board. And that was how I started with you guys, was all the way back then when I was at Mitel. But you do a maturity overlay. So now you have a tool that helps you assess and measure kind of where you're at from a general perspective. And it also offers now a maturity overlay. So you can say things like, do I understand what hardware I have that might be attacked? On a scale of 0 to 5, I'm kind of at a 3. Do I understand the software that might be under attack? And then you can get on into the nuanced and more detailed questions and move on from there. But your question was about risk frameworks specifically, right? So cybersecurity frameworks oftentimes speak to risk. If you look at CSF and look at the identify category, identify says know thyself, right? Know thy assets, know thy hardware assets, know thy software assets. But it also says know thy risks, know what risks you are up against. And then you can get into more detailed standards around risk. And there's a lot of those out there, like 800-30, for example, from NIST is a good risk standard. But at the end of the day, you've got to have some way of cataloging and evaluating and measuring and articulating and storing the risks you face. And then as you start to implement the cyber controls, you know, via whatever framework you've chosen, or even without a framework, you should always be pointing back to that risk register, right? That risk register should be the central focus of everything you do.
Well, TrustMap beats spreadsheets. I could tell you that.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah. When you're building a security program, you want to make sure that you have everything in one place and have a proper process. And that's what we do. That's great.
It's a cool tool. It's a cool tool.
Yeah. And so essentially what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that maturity has this inverse relationship with risk. Maturity goes up, risk goes down, or at least the impact of particular vulnerabilities. Is that correct?
Should. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're slicing and dicing your maturity as kind of a spectrum of answers to a set of questions, then in theory, the higher the maturity level you have across all those questions, the less risk you should be carrying, right? Like, do you protect your endpoints? Yeah, I'm a 5 on protecting endpoints. Okay, well, then endpoints probably aren't a risk. Do you know where your software assets are? I only have a 2 there. I got a bunch of them I kind of have no clue about. Your risks are still kind of high there then. You've got software assets that might get exploited that you don't even know where they are, so it's too late to discover they've been exploited. You know, so it's not a direct relationship, but the odds are if your maturity is high, your risk is low, at least on a given category, a given question, given control, given domain, given whatever the different language is that the different frameworks use.
As a CISO, who is your primary audience? After you take an assessment of your security posture, you've collected the data, you know where your risks are, you know what your maturity score is, we know what we're dealing with. You have to communicate that in the form of some sort of analytics and reports. Who are we talking to? We can't talk to everyone in the organization, who do you want to talk to first?
Yeah, I got you. Up, out, and down are the 3 ways of communicating. When you are in a role, you have got the folks you report to that you're going to have to report upstairs and tell them what you're doing, what your progress is, and what your mission and status are. You've got your peers around the organization that you're going to have to coordinate and communicate with. And then you've got the folks that report to you, up, out, and down. And to me, the ideal output that a CISO is generating should be able to satisfy up, out, and down in one artifact. And I call it the double-click method. So let's start with up. Let's go all the way up. You're reporting to the board of directors. What are you going to report to a board of directors? You're not going to get very operational, right? You don't want your board of directors involved in management. You want them involved in governance and oversight. So you're going to give them very high-level roll-ups. You're not going to come to them, in most cases, asking for money, right? But you may maybe talk about budget and money that's been spent. And, you know, and I'd be expressing it if I was to engage budget at all with the board. It would be expressed in terms of we're on track, we're under budget, you know, X percentage of accuracy. Like, I wouldn't try to get into the actual numbers because, again, you don't want to drag your board into operational concerns and management concerns. You want to keep them at that governance level. So they get the highest level, most summarized view, 3, 4, 5 slides tops, and you're done with them. However, sometimes you get a board where you've got a very cyber savvy individual. Maybe the head of your risk committee is actually cyber savvy. Maybe you've actually got a cyber committee, which is rare, but you know, that happens too. Maybe you don't have any of the committees, but you do still have somebody cyber savvy on the board. You have people that are going to ask more questions and want more detail. That's what I call the double click method, right? You can double click on any given high level overview and pop in and see a little more detail, provide that little more detail. If the board is asking for more detailed questions than you initially present to them, that's probably the same baseline communication level that you want to do with your CEO and the CFO and the CRO and the CHRO and all the rest of the C-suite, right? So they should see a little more detail than the board does. And maybe a double click on the board equals the same thing you would show them. And maybe some of them have more questions. And there's another double click. Well, that should be what you're showing your peers around the business. And maybe they have more questions than there's another double click. And by this point, you're into what you're working with your own team on. So for example, your team might be generating metrics along the lines of, let's say you're working with your SOC lead. You've got a manager of the SOC and you've got three or four people in the SOC and you're working with your SOC manager and you're generating metrics and stats on things like dwell time. I'll just pick that one at random. That might be something you put into a very detailed report with your SOC lead, your own team. Everybody on your team is going to see dwell time. That might be one you choose to share with your peers, but maybe that disappears by the time you get to the CEO level, or maybe it disappears by the time you get to the board level. Ironically, I know one CISO who's retired now who the only metric he reported to his board was dwell time because he had such a mature program he could get away with that. But dwell time might be something you don't want to show your board at all, right? It all depends on the level of detail the audience is expecting. And I call it the double click method. Start with the most rolled up and double click into the levels of detail and always have your one presentation ready to double click and have every time you release a slide deck for one of those tiers, you know, a version for all those tiers is available. And sometimes it's even literally one deck. And depends on your relationship with the board, how well you trust the board. Sometimes they only get the three or four slides. Sometimes they'll get the full 15 slide bonanza, but they're told first three slides are for you. Everything else is detail if you care to see it, right? But I try to avoid getting into dollars with boards. I try to get into, you know, avoid getting into too much detail. So the odds that I'm going to give them the full 15 slides is probably pretty slim.
How closely are you watching the SEC's proposal for boards of directors and cybersecurity?
Closely, and I want to point out that the newest NYDFS requirements make the SEC ones look lame and tame. NYDFS is really up in our business on this same, you know, the same stuff that SEC was hitting on with their proposal. NYDFS is hitting even harder to the point where the NYDFS is about to insist that there's a CISO role that reports to the board that the CEO and board have to sign off on and be accountable to cyber risk. Like there's a bunch of really hardcore statements in NYDFS that have been proposed that are along the same lines as what SEC has done with their latest guidance. The bottom line is all the entities out there that have any sway on this and any ability to create guidance and rules and regs and enforce them in some way or another, they're all pushing more and more for more regulation, more CISO roles must exist, more CISO reporting structures upstairs must exist, accountability at the board and CEO level must exist. There's a general theme with all this stuff that that this stuff's getting serious and they're not playing around anymore. And I think this is only going to grow. I think we're going to see every framework and every standard and PCI and SOC 2 and whomever else all start gravitating towards this degree of intensity as well. I think it's coming.
So everybody has to be not necessarily a cybersecurity expert, but the CEO has to be somewhat cybersecurity savvy enough to sign off on it, correct?
Right. Which means the CISO better really be good at selling and educating because right. The CEO who's going to blindly sign something is going to be a CEO who fires their CISO straight up. Like yeah. You better be able to educate and inform in that role if the CEO is going to be signing on something. And the board would be accountable as well. I've got one of my clients right now, we're working on an NYDFS heads up for the board. This is coming, gang. This has been proposed, and obviously there might be some backlash and people may fight it, but right now this is the proposal that stands, and there's heavy implications for you, the board. So we're going to talk about it and walk through it.
This is a bit of a naive question, but the NYDFS, does it apply only to companies based in New York, or is that nationwide?
I think it's the same sort of trickery as CCPA, where it's like any citizen of that state whose data is affected or impacted. So NYDFS would be financial services for any New York citizen. And of course, think about it. Anything you do in this country, the odds are somebody from New York is doing it. I think they've done that same hook is the vision for it.
Mm-hmm. Just like the SEC, I mean, is largely it's Wall Street.
Well, anybody who's publicly traded is the definition for SEC scope, right? If you're publicly traded, SEC can get you.
Right. But you're going through walls. I mean, everything right. points to New York or goes through New
right.
York.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I get your point. I get your point. Yeah, absolutely.
So what's the toughest part of building a security program in all of your experience and your time doing this? I know that's a broad question.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, though. I was in a room just this week whiteboarding with some folks, and we were talking about enterprise security, traditional IT, you know, security. And we were talking about product and application security for a SaaS-based company. And we were comparing and contrasting the two, and we were talking about what it takes to get the various stakeholders and the various two on board. And, you know, with IT security, enterprise security, if you will, you're having to rally in HR, marketing, sales, everybody. If you get issued a computer and use the computer and have these SaaS tools that your department has bought and paid for, and here you are trying to do your thing, and now here I am, Mr. Security, in theory, interfering with your day job, in practice, trying desperately to not do so. That's one set of challenges. But then when you get into application and product and DevOps and CI/CD, what you're now talking about is trying to get engineers to be secure. Engineers whose job is to get functionality out the door as quickly as possible with as few bugs as possible. You're now trying to interfere in their delivery of code, right? And even more than interfering with the rest of the business processes, I think that one shines as an example of how easy it is to do it wrong and how easy it is to piss off your audience and get thrown out. So at the end of it, what I say is the single most important thing you're doing, the hardest thing you're actually tackling in either of those scenarios, but especially when you're talking about developers, it's 90% a cultural battle and 10% a technical battle. And so culture is really the answer to your question.
Yeah, that's interesting. I sometimes try to think of what that percentage would be. And it's surprising. I mean, that's why you're saying it, because it's not an obvious thing, but I would think that that would be flipped. It would be 90% technical and 10% people. And that's very interesting, a very astute observation that it's flipped the other way.
If you've got a very complex and very established and very rapidly moving CI/CD pipeline, for example, and you just want to put a hook in there to a SAST or a DAST or some other little security, something, code flows through, code gets checked by security, code moves on. To actually write that little hook and get that hook in place, it's nothing. That's a half day's work for one person on your team. To sell engineering on the fact that you're going to do that and that that's okay that you do that, that's weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of negotiations at all levels of your organization with all levels of the engineering organization to be able to write that half day's worth of code to do that little hook to call the SAST or the DAST or whatever it might be, right? It's a cultural battle.
So just in terms of raw hours, that's that 90%, 10% mm-hmm. balance.
Educating and informing and getting people to embrace and want the security you have to offer. And then before you roll that security out, to my earlier point, learning the entire business so well that each unit of security you deliver actually enables, facilitates, ideally accelerates what they're doing. There's another huge amount of cultural hours, you know, just learning what the heck your security could and should be in relationship to the business around you. You know, that's its own incredible amount of work, again, at every level of your organization. You should be training your individual contributors in a security organization. When you meet with engineering, ask questions, learn their ways, learn their means, learn how they live. Don't just go saying, here's the new security solution we're going to cram down your throats. Find out what the heck they're doing and how they work and how they operate and why they do what they do, and then come back with that intelligence and we'll whiteboard about what kind of security we're going to hand them, because we're not going to shove it down their throats. We're going to serve it to them on a platter and they're going to want to eat it if we do it right. Culture up front, it's culture at delivery, it's salesmanship, it's politics, it's kissing babies and shaking hands.
And that's program management, or you have to include that into the picture.
CISOs are often compared to program managers because it's the old, I'm not actually responsible for that over there, but I'm accountable if we don't secure it. So I've got to use all my people skills and soft skills and wooing skills and whatever you want to call them, to try to get the folks that do own the thing to agree to do my mission with regards to their thing, right? Program managers develop some incredible skills that could totally benefit the average CISO.
So far today, we've established that you're a program manager, you're a sales executive, you are a technical expert, you're a business expert. What else do you need to be a successful CISO?
you got to truly, 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 truly be empathetic.
And a shrink. All right.
Yep. Throw some of that in, and I think you've got a lock on the roll.
All right. That psychological aspect is important. Okay. We are all out of time. Thank you so much, Alan. It's been a pleasure. It's always good to see you. And
it's good to see you again.
Thank you so much. I hope you come back, and you know, we'll see you on the next one. And everyone, thank you for joining us today for the Business of Security podcast, and we'll see you in the next one. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Business of Security podcast, brought to you by TrustMap. We want to hear from our listeners. If you have a topic you'd like to discuss on the podcast or would like to continue the conversation, please connect with us on Twitter at CyberSecPodcast or email us at businessofsecurity@trustsds.com. We want to thank Alan Alford for being our guest today. Our host was Josh Bruning, cybersecurity solutions engineer with TrustMap. You can connect with Josh on LinkedIn and learn more about TrustMap at trustmap.com. Our show is produced by Dan Rollins with LiveWire Films. You can find Dan on LinkedIn and learn more about LiveWire at livewirefilms.com. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Business of Security podcast. And that's a wrap.